You're connected to the All Songs Considered Plus One podcast. I've got a great show for you today. So there's a new and very exciting album coming from David Bowie. The record's called Black Star. You might have heard the one song, the title track that's come out. He's releasing that record, his 25th album, on January 8th. We have a brand new song today. The song's called Lazarus. But more than that, I have a conversation. And this conversation is about the new territory David Bowie explores on this 25th album. He'd been working with a big band leader, Maria Schneider, on a project, and that led him to jazz musician Donny McCaslin. And on today's Plus One podcast, I have Donny McCaslin in our New York studio, along with lifetime friend and David Bowie producer Tony Visconti. He's long been a hero of mine. I talked to saxophonist Donny McCaslin and Tony Visconti about this adventurous project and how David met Donny. Tony Visconti starts our story.
He was fulfilling a dream to make a real jazz recording with a big band. And Maria Schneider was just the perfect choice. And we both admired people like Gil Evans and Stan Kenton. And she was tutored by, well, at least by Gil Evans, right?
That's right.
She was his copyist, Donnie.
That's right. And I think she worked with him for at least a year and also was really close with Bob Brookmeyer.
Right.
And tell people who don't know who Bob Brookmeyer is, so for a little context.
He's one of the iconic big band composers who, he wrote a lot of the music for one of the Jerry Mulligan big bands, as well as playing with it. He played in for a short time in Claude Thornhill's big band. He had a long association with Clark Terry, and then he wrote a lot of music for the Village Vanguard band, which at one point was, you know, initially the Thad Jones, Mel Lewis big band. So he's one of the iconic jazz big band large ensemble writers.
They're not all these names are well known in a circle that is not necessarily the David Bowie circle. So maybe we almost need to take two steps back, which is and get to you, Donnie, and get the clearer path on David's love of jazz, American jazz music, and wanting to make this something big band. And Tony may add to this bit of conversation because you'd know.
Before this, you know, David had people like Earl Slick in his band and Mick Ronson years ago. And he had one key jazz player in his band for well over a decade, maybe two decades, and that was Mike Garson.
The piano player.
Who's a very accomplished jazz pianist. And so it was. He always had a hint of jazz in some of the earlier things. And David has a remarkable knowledge of jazz chords. I don't think he quite knows what they're called. I mean, I don't even know what they're called, but they have things like 13ths in them and flatted ninths and all that. And you don't hear that in an average rock song, but they were well hidden in recordings of the past or alluded to.
Yeah, anyone who listens to Aladdin Sane and listens to some of the crazy piano on that record gets a good idea where you're heading with this conversation, this idea, right?
That's right, but we never went all the way, as we did finally with working with Maria Schneider and her wonderful band. I mean, all the musicians in that band were the creme de la creme. They were just fantastic musicians.
And the project, the song that he worked on with Maria is?
Sue.
Here we go.
But now we'll
I so love hearing his soaring vocals against all these instruments, and maybe that's his attraction to this music, or maybe the music is what's inspiring him to sing more like that.
And you heard Donnie soaring saxophone
yes.
over David's soaring vocal. Really? So that's a double treat.
Indeed. So that was a version, that's a song, Sue, or In a Season of Crime, that came out back in October of 2014. A new version of that is on the new record. So David works with Maria, plays with all these wonderful people, including Donnie. And Donnie, so he comes to see you in a New York club?
Yes, which was, you know, thrilling. And it was not too long after that that he reached out to me and sent me a song and basically sounded me if I was interested in doing something.
Let me ask you, when you say he sent you a song, and how does David, and Tony, you could talk to this too, because over the years you've seen so much, how does he present music to people? Is it paper? Is it demos?
No, he's got quite a sophisticated multi-track recorder at home. And he got very tech savvy, I would say, in the last 4 or 5 years, because the demos are really great. You know, you listen to them and you say, how can we possibly better them?
Wow.
The demo to Sue was quite amazing, and that's the form of delivery these days.
What is he using then to capture the instruments that he wants? Because the stuff that's being played here is so organic and.
He uses drum loops, and maybe he'll play bass on a keyboard, mm-hmm. and pull up a bass patch. You know, he's using the digital technology with samples, mm-hmm. and he still plays saxophone. So he played a little bit of saxophone on a track called "Tis a Pity She Was a Whore,"
right.
Donnie got it. He got it immediately and improved on it, I must say.
Oh, thank you.
But still, you know, David can pick up a sax and write a bass part and play a piano part and put it all together in the form of a demo.
And so the demo that he sent to you, Donnie, was, what was that song?
Well, the first song was "Tis a Pity She Was a Whore." And, it's just a powerful song and really just so much material that you can work with. And I have to say his demo was really strong, as Tony mentioned. I mean, there was so much the counterpoint between the sax he had played and the synthesizer part sort of bouncing off each other, or one of the synthesizer parts. It was just terrific. And I thought, this is something that we could get into and do something with. So I was immediately thought it would be, you know, just a tremendous project.
And as a matter of fact, you can hear this demo because it was originally released as the B-side of Maria Schneider's Sue.
That's
so
right.
You can hear what a David Bowie demo sounds like if you buy that single.
Right.
How about I'll buy that right now so we can play it.
Okay.
Actually, tell me if this version I have is that demo, because I have a...
Yeah, that's okay. It.
All right, let's hear that demo. I'm just going to say to everybody out there, wait till you hear the version on the on the record. The demo is pretty cool, and you can hear so much spirit and ideas flying through.
The demo is very cool. He discovered the distortion button for that demo. Big time.
Was that him blowing sax, did you say, or not?
Yes.
Yes, yeah.
Yes.
That's great. I didn't know he was still playing that. So when he came to you, sent you a note or whatever it was after the Club 55 date,
yeah.
Did he say, I'd like to work on a song, an album, or?
I think it progressed pretty steadily from, a song or two to a few songs to kind of a whole recording project. I mean, I was, of course, absolutely interested in doing it. I mean, I love him so much, love his work. And I got back to him and told him I was into it, and just kind of one thing led to another. He sent me just like, I can't remember how many tunes, maybe six or seven before the first time we got together to record, and every song was really strong, and the demos were really strong. In fact, when we ended up recording, we pretty much were true to the demo forms he had sent. So it was tremendous.
Tony, the conversations that revolved around this, was there any sort of general attitude that he and the band and you were all after in making this record? Could you characterize like a tone or something to not do, or any of the above?
The only thing, it wasn't actually spoken out loud, but we were going to make a David Bowie album with jazz musicians, but they weren't necessarily going to play jazz. It was their fresh look on what we normally do. And, Mark Juliana and Donnie are relatively, a lot younger than us. And whereas I grew up with Charlie Parker and Charlie Mingus and all that, they too grew up with those jazz musicians as part of their education. But they also grew up with David Bowie, like listening to David Bowie records when they were young. So this was such a different thing. Like if we used rock musicians trying to play jazz, it would have been a very different album. But we went to this place first, and then the hybridization just began on the first day. Like we knew this was something brand new, something really not done before. And so it's never spoken like so clearly, but we kind of, that's what we wanted. When we heard it, that's what we wanted.
Can you paint a picture of that first time everybody getting together? Where are you? You all, I assume, had listened to the demos. What song was it that you picked up for the first time? Where was David? Is he behind a control board? Is he in the middle of the room with the players? Is he?
Well, the first day, we recorded at the Magic Shop, which is an iconic studio in New York City. And I'm pretty sure we started with a song whose working title was Someday. It's actually interesting because it speaks to something Tony mentioned earlier about the way David puts chords together. And this song, I remember particularly, has very interesting chord structure that's very jazz, modern jazz-esque, with a lot of half steps, some minor ninths. I mean, we say like crunchy chords, And I remember having the hardest time just sitting there and trying to learn the voicings and work on the voice leading and stuff as I was just preparing a lead sheet and stuff.
Are you hearing the demos and then writing the charts from the demos?
That's what I did. I mean, I sort of... I just charted everything out just to have it, and then wrote down the forms. And then my band, we got together once before we went in the studio just to kind of run things through and make sure we're all on the same page in terms of form. And then because there were, David had horn parts and voicings on his demos, and I wanted to, transcribe those so I could kind of experiment with different orchestration things in terms of playing different instruments like alto flute or clarinet or flute so I wanted to write it out so I could kind of see it and use different voices to see what seemed like the best combination so I'd be ready when we went to the studio.
The other thing is when we start previous David Bowie albums, we have chord lead sheets like G, C7, A7, D minor. Donnie brings in these Stan Kenton charts. I mean, you have to be able to read music to read the charts that Donnie came in with, which was really good because everyone could read music. And, you know, you don't play all those notes at once, but then Donnie started assigning the notes, like Jason on the keyboards would play certain things and Tim Lefevre on bass would play some fundamental notes, not necessarily the root note, but he'd go for a stranger note. And what's the nice thing is that we didn't really tell people what to play because we respect this band so much. Mm-hmm. We wanted to hear their interpretation almost immediately. If they were going too far out, then we would rein them back in. But it was a joy to hear their sensibilities at work and you know, to see Donnie come so prepared. I remember the first day when we arrived, Donnie and the band were sitting, there's a couch at the back of the studio with a kind of a table, coffee table, and they were very silent and they had their kind of arms folded or just their hands in their lap, you know, like they're definitely not a raucous rock and roll band, you know. So the tone from the very beginning was one of, you know, kind of cerebral, kind of intellectual, but when you hear the playing, the playing is passionate, but we were working at many levels right from day one.
Let's hear a little of the playing, and then we'll come back and talk some more. How about if I play some of Lazarus? This is a 6 minute and 20 second
song.
Yeah,
that's the album cut.
Yeah, yeah.
God, this is beautiful.
Well, of course, you hear Donnie on the saxophones, which sounds beautiful. It's got a flanging effect, you know, kind of something you would hear all the way back to Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. That's the effect on the saxophones. And that heavy guitar is David on guitar.
Ah.
And that came we took that off his home demo because with today's technology, if the tempos match, you can just take it off digitally and insert it digitally, and he really nailed it at home. So there was no reason to replay it. You don't have to replay these things if they sound perfect.
And were you hearing that guitar, Donnie, and the rest of the band as you played? Is that something that was part of what you were listening to? Was it added later? I'm just trying to figure out.
Well, you know what? I honestly don't remember particularly for this track, but I do remember that we were asking to have it included when we would record because it had such a great vibe, his guitar playing on a variety of tracks. You know, just this gritty, rocking, soulful thing that was frankly inspiring for us to play with. So we had it included a lot of time in recording. And just thinking back to something you asked earlier, David was there the whole time and he was singing with us while we were playing. So it really had, I think another thing that was really spurring us on was the passionate way he was singing. Mm. It was tremendous. It was interesting because, you know, we'd get to the studio about an hour early and I'd, you know, do some long tones and scales or whatever. You know, Mark would hit, you know, do a little rudiments. We all kind of have our little warm-up routine, you know. David would come in and we would start practicing a song and he'd, you know, sing a little bit, but then he was kind of ready to go right away, which was really impressive to me. And he was dealing right away.
Are you working in the daytime, nighttime? What is it? What do we all like to do here?
Yeah, you know, roughly 11 to 4 during the day. And sometimes we'd stay later and practice the songs for the next day or add some different overdubs. But,
you know, for us, people are asking if David will ever tour and sing live again. And we were getting a five-hour concert every day. You'd look up and you go, there's David Bowie singing live, you know, and very, very well.
I had this image in my mind. I go to the Winter Jazz Fest in New York City. And I had this image of walking and seeing Donnie in some tiny club, and some singer happens to walk out and play. Someone we all know and love.
You never know.
Well, you know, the thing about this record is that, okay, Black Star, which many of the people would have heard by now, but Black Star is a very complicated song. But some of these songs have these mesmerizing repetitive phrasing that with the saxes and all that else is going on, you want to hear that live. I want to hear that live. You got to hear it live. You lived it.
It was really thrilling. I mean, we'd get the take, which was usually maybe two or three takes, and then you know, we'd start, you know, adding things here and there, and when David would go in and maybe he would add a vocal thing or do something here and there. And observing the way him and Tony worked together was tremendous. They have so much history and just the chemistry between the two of them, and they were able to just churn out these vocals. Like, it was really fast and really on point. And just the two of them working together, it was inspiring to see that.
Mm-hmm. Tony, I've been thinking about the singing style on this record, and since you know David so long and so well, what is going on that feels so different here? Is it just the form is not locked so tight like a rock band? I don't know.
I think he's singing a lot freer.
Yeah.
He's, you know, obviously everyone knows he's written a musical now, and I think his mind has been on that musical for the past 2 years. You know, you don't write a musical in 6 months. And I know he's interested in, he often goes and sees other musicals. I think that's the style. He's got more of his theatrical voice. He told me years ago, he said, if I wasn't going to go into rock, I would definitely go into musical theater. And when I first met him in 1967, he was writing like Anthony Newley and Leslie Bricusse, you know, those writers who wrote Oliver, and he was kind of writing songs like that. If you go way back to his very first album, you'll hear that style back then. And he also admires Scott Walker.
And yeah, I hear some of that in there.
Yeah, Scott Walker's gone much more theatrical later in life, too, and has that great baritone stage voice. David's very loud, too. You can't stand next to him when he's singing. You have to back off a little bit. So he's got a strong voice.
Yeah, one thing that makes me think of, too, is on the new version of Sue, speaking of, you know, the freedom and stuff, there's a point deep into the song where he just spontaneously modulated, I think like up a half step, and the band kind of bent with him, and it was so in the moment, just like a jazz improviser, because that's frankly what I do sometimes. You know, I start to play in other keys against the key of the moment to create tension, and then, you know, try to find a way to release it or go through a series of different kind of harmonic sequences and try to resolve it. And it just happened, and he did it, and it was so compelling and so free.
It's really exciting. It sounds like a lot of this record was really done as a studio band with a singer playing. I mean, it doesn't...
Well, that's true. You know, you played the beginning of Lazarus, and what came to mind, Bob, when I heard that was maybe the second song that we recorded, second or third song, I'm guessing, and we kind of just started vamping on it, and Tim was playing something on bass, and David said, I like that. And then, you know, kind of one thing led to, and he said, you know, keep going with that or whatever. And then it ended up being this kind of intro that we just heard.
Yeah, that's actually a bass. That's not a guitar. Huh. Tim's playing way up the neck.
And that was, it was like just being a band in the studio like you were describing, and it was great.
Very inspiring. You all have so much insight. Yet. Is there anything I should touch on that I haven't?
I guess there was one thing that I would maybe elaborate on about what Tony was talking about earlier about just sort of, you know, my background and my group's background. You know, I'd done acoustic records over the course of touring with these guys, I started asking them what they were listening to, and I got, you know, a lot more deeply into electronica music and drum and bass music, and then just trying to think about what can I, as an improviser, as a jazz improviser, how do I negotiate this terrain? And I really loved the sonic thing, and I loved the rhythmic aspect. So, you know, I was trying to find my way in that, and that's what led to Casting for Gravity and Fast Future and stuff. So I think, you know, with the band, we're exploring this area of improvisation and electronica music. And then I think that's where we intersected with Tony and David.
Thank you both so much.
You're welcome, Bob.
Hope I get to meet and see you all sometime.
Thank great. You, Bob. Likewise. Yeah.
Cheers.
Okay, take care.
Be well. Thanks, Bob. Thanks for the great work, Andrew.
Bye.
Yeah.
Thank
cheers.
You.
It means a lot. Donnie McCaslin, the band leader on this new record by David Bowie called Black Star. The album comes out January 8th. You can hear the new song, Lazarus, on our website. For NPR Music, I'm Bob Boylan. It's All Songs Considered.